And Jesus said, I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. What I want to know is, how did he say it? What was the tone? I've read it over and over again. Sometimes when I read this, Jesus sounds just like Jack Nicholson, sitting in a courtroom and shouting, you can't handle the truth. Which, by the way, is a perfectly acceptable way to translate that verse. I still have many things to say to you, but you can't handle it now. Is that what Jesus is saying? With just a little frustration, I would like to tell you more, but you're not ready. It's too grown up. It's too much for you at this time. Maybe. Sometimes when I read that verse, Jesus sounds just like a young Luke Skywalker meeting a very old, small Yoda, and he boldly declares, I'm not afraid. And Yoda creepily responds, you will be. You will be. Is that what Jesus is saying? I'd like to tell you more, but you're not ready. It's too scary, it's too big, it's too much for you at this time. Maybe. One thing is clear, Jesus is saying when the Spirit comes, everything is going to change. Scottish theologian John McIntyre spoke about Pentecost as the wholehearted expression of the almost unlimited imagination of God. The wholehearted expression of the almost unlimited imagination of God. When God's eyes are closed and dreaming about what life can be for creation, for you, for your family and friends, for our church, what is God dreaming? The imagination of God turned loose on the church and on the world. So here's the plan. When you leave today, we're going to explore that one verse, that one thought. And when you leave, I want you to go with two things in mind. First is one line from a very disturbing story in the Old Testament. And the second is an idea, a thought that I hope will stay with you for a few days. So let me narrate an event for you from the Old Testament. It's not in the lectionary. We would never, ever use this story in Vacation Bible School. I doubt that you've ever heard a sermon on it. Frankly, it sounds more like a scene out of Game of Thrones, if Baptists ever watch Game of Thrones. But here's the story. You can look up some other time. It's in 2 Samuel 21. There's been a famine for 3 years. 3 years. David is king, and God is using it to get their attention. Because God hates to waste pain. It's just so costly, and a decision needs to be made. And David asks what needs to happen to end this famine, and God says the previous king, Saul, did a terrible thing trying to wipe out the Gibeonites. Saul attempted genocide. And for that, the famine will continue. And so King David goes to the Gibeonites and he asks, what do I need to do to make things right? And they say, give us 7 sons of Saul so that we can kill them. And that's what David does. Saul has many widows, and he takes 2 sons from Rizpah, a concubine. The implication is clear. She has no standing. She has no power. There's nothing that's going to come back on David. To them, he also adds 5 grandsons from Merab, Saul's daughter. And they take these 7 young men and disgracefully kill them and then impale and put them on display on a hillside. Left for scavengers. Violence. Hatred. Revenge, death, nothing is changing. And Saul is at fault, and the Gibeonites are at fault, and David is at fault. The only one who isn't, the only character in the story who brings us hope, who acts with dignity and humanity, is this woman, Rizpah. She goes to that hillside to be with the boys to whom she gave birth and nursed and watched grow up. And the other five, they really aren't that different. And in death, she adopts them as her own. And she sets up camp. And she is there day and night watching over their bodies to keep the scavengers away. She is there from the fall harvest to the spring rain. That woman is there for 6 months watching over them. The power of love. All for the honor and dignity of broken bodies caught up between the actions of arrogant, power-hungry kings. And here's the line from that story. Here's the line that I think that's worth considering. When David learned what Rizpah, Saul's concubine, had done, he went. That is, when King David hears what she was doing, he is shamed. When the powerless confront the powerful, shame. Her courage and humanity shook him. Shamed him into gathering the remains of those 7 boys, the remains of Saul, bringing them home and giving them a proper and an appropriate burial. And only then, after Rizpah and her brave, loving actions of dignity and honor and justice, only then is the famine over. So let's weave together a couple of things. I want God to do God stuff in the world. And if God isn't clear what that is, I have a list that I'm more than happy to present. But it turns out God prefers, for some reason, to invite us to collaborate with God. Why, you ask? I don't know. We don't always play well with others. We don't always play well with God. But oh, the power. Oh, the influence. Oh, what happens when one person feels the breath of God. One person feels the Spirit of God. One person catches on in the direction God is moving them. And so because of Jesus, we get to live differently, not in fear of God, but in community with God, not in denial of who we are, but lovingly with one another in community, not in fear that expresses itself in anger or racism or hateful words, not in fear that makes someone a scapegoat. No, because Jesus became the scapegoat for us all. So we don't have to fear generosity because we trust in God's generosity. And we don't have to fear forgiving because we have been forgiven. We don't have to have it our way because we've discovered the joy of blessing others. We don't have to act in anger. Even when we're cut off in traffic or that slow driver on the inside lane and they're wrong. Because we trust in the one who guides us beyond just the temporary moment. But too many have given up hope. Hope in the power of God's love, hope in the way God has decided this is how the world is going to change. Years ago at Johns Hopkins University, a young sociology professor assigned the class to an economically poor, struggling part of town to interview 200 boys. The assignment: on the basis of what you discover in their family and in their community, predict their future. Shocked at what they saw in the neighborhood and driven by stereotypes that make us uncomfortable today, those students estimated that 90% of those boys would someday serve time in prison. 25 years later, the same professor, with a new class, said, go find them, as many as you can, and see what happens. They found 180 of those boys. Only four had ever been incarcerated, and now they had to ask, how was the first group so wrong? So they started looking for common denominators, and for over 100 of those young men, one name kept coming up. Over 100 of them, one high school teacher, a Miss O'Rourke. And after a long search, they found Sheila O'Rourke in a long-term care facility in Memphis. So they went and interviewed her, and she was a bit surprised at the questions, and she just said, all I did was love every one of them. Today we're asking you to join the movement of really following Jesus, collaborating with God, a renewed commitment to the vision of kingdom living. And one day we may have to march up that hill like Rizpah and remind our neighbors of how God really intended life to be. Because it isn't just now, but we're modeling for them what life is going to be one day when God's love and justice truly reigns on earth. So here's the one line to chew on. Here's the one thing to talk about over lunch. If you choose to follow Jesus, the day will come in your life when you must become the answer to your own prayers. If you choose to follow Jesus, the day will come in your life, might be this week, might be 30 years from now. It might be next month with your family. It might be 10 years from now with a coworker. If you choose to follow Jesus, the day will come in your life when you must become the answer to your own prayers. And I say it, it's not because God isn't there. It's not because God doesn't care. It's not because God isn't listening. It's because on that day, you are the person God has been waiting for. On that day, you are the person on whom the Spirit of God blows. On that day, you are the answer to many prayers. Speaking of Star Wars, there's one more thing to highlight about this verse. George Lucas says his purpose in directing the films was not to shoot the movie. Instead, it was to shoot around the movie. And that was his way of saying there were all these teams of special effects people who were layering in all of these. And he had to film around that and then find a way to work all of those elements together. So here's the example. Scene 158 in Revenge of the Sith, it lasts just a little longer than 45 seconds. Those 45 seconds consist of 26 separate shots. Those 26 separate shots take 1,185 individual frames. 45 seconds, 1,185 individual frames. It took 910 artists, 70,441 hours to create those frames. Or to put it another way, if one person had the skill set to do all of that, and that one person worked 8 hours a day, 5 days per week, 50 hours per year, it would take that one person 35 years to produce 45 seconds of Revenge of the Sith. An entire career. Because some things are best done in community. As in most of the Gospel of John, the yous should be translated as y'alls. I still have many things to say to y'all, but y'all can't hear them now. Not individuals. Oh, what happens when a group of people are captured by the breath of God and are moved together. I still have many things to say, but y'all can't hear them now. How did Jesus say that? the tone. Sometimes when I read that verse, I hear the voice of a child in the first grade, simple and quiet, telling the truth. I was getting ready for work. I put on a nice pair of pants, a dress shirt, and a new tie. Bright, colorful, stylish. As I walked through the house, I ran into my daughter in the first grade, and I said, "How do I look?" She looked me up and down, and she said, "You look like a clown." She didn't say it with sarcasm. She didn't say it with guile. She said it like, "You did it." That's the look you're going for, yeah. Way to go, Dad. I wasn't ready for the Spirit of Truth that day. I don't think I ever asked her again. But I hope I'm ready today. I hope we are ready today. Come, Holy Spirit. Change us. And change our world. Amen.